Martina Navratilova, possibly the greatest tennis player of all time, is turning 60 this year. Together, we revisited her hometown.
Growing up in a communist country, you kind of did whatever it took.
Her earliest years are from an era that no longer exists. In her youth, she was feisty.
You know, I want to play when I want and where I want.
Defecting to America, within 4 years, the world's best. She transformed herself, and there was a time no one could beat her.
And the dream has come true.
A pioneer, an activist, an icon, but perhaps she has the best way of describing herself.
BBC, Just Call Me Martina.
December 2014, New York City. In a life of many fresh starts, this is another.
The calm before the storm. Mary's got the rings, right?
I have them.
Holy shit.
Billie Jean King.
She's a serve volleyer, man. She just serve volleys. She knows herself. She's like, go get them. Don't worry about the consequences. Worry about that later.
She's very well read. She has an incredible memory. She's good at math. She's good at languages. She's good at just about anything. It reflects in her social media, what she tweets out, what she reads, who she advocates for.
She's getting married, and I'm single. Go figure.
Chris Evert.
This is a friend of mine, Karen. Jeannie Ash. Jeannie, have you met the mayor? You must have met.
At the age of 59, Miss Navratilova is about to become Mrs. Navratilova. It's her wedding day. She's marrying Julia Lemegova, a businesswoman, a former Miss USSR, a worried Julia.
I start thinking in three languages, and it just sabotages me.
You are an extraordinary couple together, a radiant couple, may I add. Martina, thank you for so many years, and I may add, long before it was fashionable, you stood up and you spoke up, and we are eternally grateful for that.
Thank you.
She's been a great fighter for people who are gay, and she's helped to crusade for people's rights. That's a very important thing to do, especially when you're involved in sport and music and whatever.
Julia? I promise to love you, to cherish you in sickness and in health. No matter what, I will be there for you and for our family. I promise not to make the social media another member of our family.
I can just imagine how many girls growing up, knowing they were gay, must have thought, God for her. What an incredible example.
With this ring.
By the powers vested in me by the state of New York, I pronounce you married. You may embrace.
The happy couple share a kiss, then someone hands Julia a posy of red flowers.
This is a wedding day with a message. Same-sex marriages can take place in New York, but not everywhere in America.
I got you. I got you. We wanted to do it before the end of the year, didn't want to wait, but it wasn't legal in Florida, so we had to do it somewhere else, and it just made sense logistically, emotionally. Julia, same thing for her. She had some special times in New York City. It just made sense.
She came up to me and said, hello, I'm Martina. I said, hi, I'm Julia.
And that was the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Thank you to be such a wonderful parent to my girls, and your girls now. And I love you so much, and this is the most special day in my life.
They clink glasses.
Because we've been together for such a long time, but I thought the kids felt more secure within the relationship, that it's validated and equal. For me, I felt so much more secure, like, you can't mess with my family anymore. You cannot tell me I'm less than, and it was huge. That impact was bigger than I realized it would be. So here we are celebrating being full-fledged members of society. I know it's made a big difference for girls. To all those most people that might have a problem with same-sex marriage, I say, look at our family. And I feel like most of my life is right in this room, one way or the other. I just wish...
Martina becomes emotional.
I wish my parents were here to see this, but I know they're watching, and so now we have a new family. So thanks, everybody.
Julia's blonde-haired teenage daughter serenades them. Stephen Fry.
She's found her permanent doubles partner in life, as I'm sure was endlessly said at every tennis player's wedding. But not mixed doubles in her case. How wonderful life is. Now
you're in the world. Julia hugs her daughter, and Martina gives her a kiss on the cheek. Now Martina and Julia step out into a New York street and get into a car with Julia's daughters.
Hi!
All without a hitch, so to speak. We got hitched without a hitch. Mrs. Navratilova.
Can't believe it.
So now Mom is a Mrs. What do I call you now?
You call me Martina.
From New York at night to a train passing through a rural area in the day.
Martina was born in Czechoslovakia, a country now split into Slovakia and here, the Czech Republic. And it's to Prague that I've come to find out more. We're going back in time to an age when things were very different. Today's long before I got to know her on tour.
Sue Barker playing Martina at Wimbledon. Martina beats Sue with a cross-court passing shot.
Martina's parents divorced when she was three. Her mother left Prague with her two daughters and they moved to a village 40 minutes away by train, Jebnice.
Martina, this is home, but this is the centre of the village.
Yes, and this used to be cobblestone, so riding the bicycle was a, you know, a bit of a precarious proposition. The pub was there, the grocery store was here, but now there's extra stores, and some changed. And the famous dentist, that's the window where he used to torture me. It was bad energy, because the dentist always used to give me a hard time. You need to stop eating candy. I'm like, I don't like candy. I don't eat candy. I don't chew gum. I wasn't doing any of the bad things. And I still had bad teeth.
On the tennis courts, it's somebody else. She even didn't like to practice. Always father said, oh, you must do things, don't lay on the sofa. She doesn't like to run. Imagine. When she stops playing and at home, she is different. Sensitive, playful.
You know, this is what I used to do when I was a kid, walk around.
That balance is still there, you see.
Not fall in. But usually there was no water in there. Ooh, there somebody turned the fountain on.
For all the sense of fun, this was a childhood spent in post-Second World War Czechoslovakia. Europe behind the Iron Curtain.
Growing up in a communist country, you just kind of did whatever it took. You know, you told a bad political joke and you would go to jail. But, you know, the childhood up to when I left, 18, I had a fantastic life here. In the summer, we swam in the river. In the winter, we skated on it, you know, climb people's fences and steal their cherries and walnuts. But you really couldn't buy fruit. They were very expensive. They were more expensive per pound than or per kilo than the best meat.
She was just a little bouncy, happy child with very exceptional physical capabilities. I remember, I think we went to the local river and suddenly this little girl took a little pebble and she threw it as far as we could. And he said, wow, I mean, this is quite amazing. My uncle, who was quite a tennis player, he said, yeah, she's an absolutely amazing kid. I have never seen one like that. And I think they were tired of him a little bit. He was saying, she's going to win Wimbledon before she's 20. He really believed in her.
My mom was a great athlete. I mean, she could have done anything she wanted to. She played volleyball. She ran track. She was very fast. She could have been a great tennis player. But she encouraged it in me. And then I'm like, okay, world, here I come. I was like 10.
It's a lovely setting.
And Karlstein, which is a famous castle, it's maybe 5 miles as the crow flies, and that's a big tourist attraction. That's King Charles. Mm-hmm. He built the castle for his mistress. Those were the days. The courts are great. The middle one is where I hit my first ball on a real court. Then this one was the first time I put my feet together on the serve. Ah. I was right here. Clubhouse is pretty much the same. I kissed my first boyfriend. No, second boyfriend, right there in the clubhouse, in the locker room.
Whatever the attractions, it was here Martina first began entering the record books.
This is when I won the Czech championships. And then, like, 2 weeks later, I won the junior championship.
And even then, you're on tiptoes trying to be taller.
I was just so short. And this was the women's part. See, right. It still is, women.
Yeah.
So, dames. Uh-huh. So this is where I was snogging with my boyfriend, right here. Right here. And still the original locker doors.
Really? Yeah. Oh, no.
That's my sister. Ah. That's my sister's locker, yeah. I was in the corner there.
Do you come back here much?
I come 2-3 times a year, yeah. So now that my sister lives here again, the last 3 years, and every time I come back, I hang out, yeah.
By the time she was 14, Martina was too good for the local club, and so began her travels in tennis. First stop, not so very far away, the Sparta Prague Club. Here she met the Czech star of the day, the 1973 Wimbledon champion, Jan Kodeš.
As the number one in Czech, there was many people around here, you know, watching my practice and so on. Martina's father always come to me and says, "Hey, Jan, Martina is going to play on court 4 practice. I like that you look at how she's playing, you know." And I said, "Mirek, she shouldn't come to the net that often. She should be more careful and prepared the approach much better." And he said, "Don't worry about it. I think it's very good that she comes to the net because she will have something what the other girls never have. Every girl can play from the baseline, but if she learns to play on the net, she's going to be extraordinary." And later it become true.
I would hit for an hour and then we'd take the tram back to the train station, and that was the routine, you know. I could literally hear the train come in and start running, and I could still catch it.
Going back and forth by tram, train, and on the back of the family motorbike, these were days of innocence that suddenly stopped.
Footage of tanks on a city's streets.
August 1968, the Soviet response to the reform program of Alexander Dubček's government.
Do you regard your country as having been invaded this morning?
It was an invasion, yes.
Where do you think Mr. Dubček is? He appears to have
He's still in office.
The Prague Spring was over.
There's a picture in there with the girl that I was with when the Russian tanks came. I was in Pilsen playing a junior tournament. I got there Thursday night. Friday we were supposed to go play tennis. And Friday morning, her father called us and said, at 8 in the morning, he says, "Don't go outside, there's tanks." So of course we went outside. And by then we saw the tanks everywhere. The roads were torn up. There was tanks everywhere scouring the countryside.
The Russians move around like strangers from another world, patrolling the streets by day and night and digging their roots even deeper into Czechoslovak soil. The Czechoslovaks watch their expansion grimly and react with the only workable attitude in this unreal situation, an attitude of silent defiance.
It was just an amazing sadness going on in the country because under Dubček we were feeling that, you know, we might not have capitalism, but not communism either. Just kind of, we could breathe, we could travel, we could start your own business. There was a hope for having more freedoms, personal freedoms, and that was squashed. The change was coming from the top, but they didn't like it, so they sent 600,000 soldiers with tanks. The army was told to stand down by the government because we knew they had no chance.
I think we can relate to one another because of the past that we had. In my case, growing up in a war-torn country, people would stand in a line to get a piece of bread or just, you know, one bottle of milk, and you know, they would live on it for weeks. So it's not kind of experience that you wish for anybody to go through, but I'm sure that Martina would agree that those experiences have helped us to get tougher and get hungrier for the success.
it's hard, you know, to understand what it was like coming from a communist country, of how difficult it is to get out.
Well, that was the tricky bit. Again, if I didn't get all the way to the top, I wouldn't have gotten the visa to get out of the country. So you...
Was that added motivation in a way?
Yes, absolutely. Mm. I knew this was a way out for me of the country.
It might be thought she was born at the wrong time, to be born in a totalitarian state. But where she was born and how she was born and her sexual identity gave her some of this extraordinary internal energy to fight. And if you'd taken that away from her, if exactly the same genetic package that is Martina had been born 30 years later and grown up in after the Velvet Revolution in what would then be the Czech Republic, would she have had the same fight in her tennis game?
What really helped the travel plans, Martina's escape plans, was being national champion at the age of 17 and leading Czechoslovakia to victory in the Federation Cup. To compete in the international team event, you couldn't stay put behind the Iron Curtain. You had to travel, and Martina found herself traveling back and forth to America.
It just felt so luxurious and easy and free. The Western culture was very much craved here. And we would listen to ABBA and Diana Ross and Neil Diamond, Elton John, of course.
So you brought a bit of that back?
And brought tapes, cassettes.
She goes, I want to be number one in the world, and the only way I can become number one in the world is if I live over here, train over here, and I have the freedom to train the way that I want to and make the choices that I want to.
I remember studying English, and there was a picture of Empire State Building, and I was telling my roommate, I'm going there next year. I'm going to be in New York. So I was the bee's knees, because I was going to get out of the country and go to New York City.
It was something special in our country, communist country. It was like to travel to the moon now.
Kika Zapova, school friend. Views of New York in the early 70s, the Empire State Building and Statue of Liberty.
Well, I think it was a culture shock for her when she came over to America. And she was like a kid in a candy store.
Traffic crossing Brooklyn Bridge. Billie Jean King, 39 Grand Slam titles.
I first met Martina when she was 17. And you could tell right away she was going to be like number one if she put her mind to it. In the beginning, when she first got to America, all she did was eat and have fun and try to be more American than Americans.
She was eating pancakes and hamburgers, and her diet was a bit off. But she had no luxuries in Prague, Czechoslovakia, and she went wild for a little bit.
A busy fast food restaurant, then Sue and Martina in a coffee shop.
You enjoyed everything America. It was well documented. You know, put on a... quite a few pounds, yeah.
I put on so much weight the first 2 weeks, I had to buy shorts in Dallas. Second week on tour, I had to buy me a new pair of shorts because I couldn't fit into my normal clothes. So when Olga Morozova saw me that third tournament, she didn't say anything. She just, this is what she did to me. Instead of saying hello, she just blew up her cheeks. Great. I thought I just looked more feminine, you know, because all my muscles were disappearing. I had little female curves. And, you know, I'd have two hamburgers for lunch and two scoops of ice cream. Breakfast, I would have eggs and bacon and pancakes and cereal. Never had cereal growing up, never had pancakes growing up. So I just got heavy. I put on 20 pounds in 2 weeks. That's hard to do when you're playing tennis.
Living the good life was hardly going to please the regime back home. To compete in the major tournaments in the summer of 1975, she'd need a new visa.
A father come to me and says, Jan, you know, the Federation wants to stop Martina to go to the US Open. You know, could you help? I went to our Minister of Sports, you know, and I said, you cannot do this. And if you stop her for now, what is going to happen in the future?
Imagine you want to go play the Italian. Oh, no, we're not going to give you the visas because you're too Americanized. Then I thought, I cannot be in this limbo forever. And so that's why I left, so.
Who did you discuss that with, or was it...
My dad. My dad knew that I was probably going to stay. And he said, don't tell Mom.
Wow.
If you go, don't come back.
But did he encourage you, or did he just say?
He just said, you know, this is the only choice you have if you really want to play. So I didn't tell Mom.
She was calling from United States, and I told her on the phone, don't come back. Even if they would tell you anything, don't come back. Because they would put her to prison, of course. She was already a famous tennis player, and those who tried to defect or defected, they always got prison.
That was a bold, brave move. I don't think I could have done that. No, I know I couldn't have done that. To be a distance from my family, and she, I remember asking her, what about your family? She goes, I don't know when I'll ever see them.
It was after I lost to Chris in the semis at the US Open. The next day I went to the Immigration and Naturalization Service, and the next morning it's in the paper already. They told me not to say anything, but the next morning it's in the Washington Post that a famous tennis player defected.
My goal in my life is to become number one. You know, I want to play as much as I can, and when I want and where I want, and I didn't get this chance while being under the Czech government.
Have you been thinking about this move for a long while?
Well, I've been thinking about it, you know, for a long time, but I never really thought that I would do it. I thought I might, you know, get married someday and maybe live in the States, but I seriously started thinking about it about a couple of weeks ago.
In the communist country, when somebody left the country or somebody in the family was politically active against communists, so the rest of the family somehow suffered. Kids couldn't go to school, or people lost their jobs, they lost their house. So people didn't talk to us, they didn't want to be friends with us anymore because Martina was bad, like they wrote very badly about her in newspapers that she left the country. And I left country because I had some problems with the director of the school, who actually told me that she is a shame for the nation, that there is no place for me at the university, and show me the door and say, there you go.
When people ask me, what are your regrets? I said, I regret that I had to do that. Mm. You know, that I had to leave my family. I had to leave my, you know, home country and leave everything behind.
It was like she died. It was so sad, you can't imagine it. I admire her courage, because she was number one, okay, she had money after that, but to be alone, and she was 17, 18 years old.
I was a little bit scared for her because I knew she was immature, she was 18-year-old kid, and I was wondering whether she'll be able to handle it, and that was one thing. She was able to find good people to give her good advice.
Professional tennis in the 1970s was in the throes of a capitalist makeover. Players were forming their own tours, pushing against the old order. They were pushing themselves, and Martina soon spotted who were the best and why.
I think when we went down to the practice courts with the likes of Harry Hopman and Australians, that, you know, I think Martina recognized that why we were winning, it was because we were fitter. Martina, she was young and was getting through the matches, but as she climbed up the ladder and got into the quarterfinals and semifinals and then winning some matches, that gives you the experience and the determination to say, hey, I'm here to play and I'm here to win.
A smiling young Chris Evert.
Chris Evert was an early friend and doubles partner. Together, they won Wimbledon in 1976, a Grand Slam title to add to the doubles they'd won at the French Open the year before. In singles, the friend was a rival.
The core and the essence of Martina hasn't changed. She is calmer, I think. As she gets older, she blossoms. I think we're both late bloomers. I think that tennis bit, when you're in such an intense competitive environment, it's not conducive to growing necessarily as a person.
Martina's breakthrough moment came in the Wimbledon final of 1978. She would become champion and world number one for the first time.
I turned 16 during that championship, and I just remember the joy of her winning her first major. Who knew that it would be the first of 18?
Pam Shriver, 22 Grand Slam titles.
I was happy that even though I lost in the middle weekend, that I stayed to watch her defeat Chrissy live and in person, because such an early part of my playing career, it was important to see that kind of match in person.
Jana Navratilova, Martina's sister.
If you wanted to see her on the TV, we had to go to Pilsen, close to the border, to the west, and we have some friends, and they showed German TV. So we could see her playing on the TV.
Czech TV didn't show it. They would show until I started winning, and then they wouldn't show it. That's how people knew I was in the finals, when they didn't show the final. When I lost early, then they showed the final. They would write about the tournament and then kind of ignore my half of the draw. And then when I got to the finals, they stopped talking about it. That's how people knew I was winning, when there was nothing in the paper.
You know, she was playing and we were very nervous. It was terrible. Mama had to take a cognac, father a little brandy, and, you know, and after the match, oh.
Martina on court.
Mrs. Jana Navratilova hadn't seen her daughter since she defected to the West 4 years ago. But today, she was able to watch her daughter as she played her opening match on the centre court in defence of the title she won last year. Permission was finally granted when the All England club contacted the Prime Minister of Czechoslovakia.
It's like long lost daughter or son coming from war, almost, you know. At some point, we didn't even know if we would ever see each other again. And it all happened so quickly that we really didn't, neither one of us was really hoping to get it done. But when it finally happened, it was just very thrilling, you know, I can't really describe it.
It's 4 years since you last saw her in the flesh.
Four and a half.
How has she changed?
She's now very skinny. And for me, it's very, very beautiful.
Having eaten on arrival in America, Martina was now burning up the calories. This was a new regime of mental strength and fitness.
By the late 70s, early 80s, we were ready to talk about nutrition and working out and weights and all that. And with her physique, she was just perfect to really push the game forward. Just getting more information about nutrition and how to cross-train more, Martina was amazing. Every week, she'd always want to lift weights at least once to maintain.
This was taking the women's game into a new dimension, a new domination.
Even amongst the best sportsmen and women, there are very few people who can come back year after year to take the top prizes again and again.
I guess I started the fitness craze, you know, in that I started working out off the court. I didn't just do my training on the court, I did other sports. So I guess I was the pioneer in that while everything got more technical and technological.
By the mid-1980s, she was totally dominant, winning six consecutive Grand Slam singles titles.
Do you have any advice to young people watching Record Breakers who would like to be the best in the world?
First of all, do your best. That goes without saying. You know, you can't slouch off and expect for things to fall into your lap. You have to give it your best effort.
I agree with her there. She's right on the money, and boy, was she fit.
My generation were the transition generation from amateur to professional tennis. We had both. And then the second generation is your Chris and Martina and Sue. The first generation was so lucky to have the second generation. They were true superstars. Martina and Chris had the greatest rivalry in the sport ever. If they had been men, they would talk about it constantly. Martina and Chris were that exceptional.
At their peak, they met in 14 Grand Slam finals. Former doubles partners locked into an individual rivalry that spanned more than a decade.
I appreciate her for what she did for women's tennis and what she did for my game, which was to lift the level. And she appreciated me, I think, to have as a rival.
Martina playing against Chris Evert.
We were lucky we had those two players. They made a huge difference. If we didn't have them, I don't know if we still would have a WTA tour.
Billie Jean King.
They competed and they're trying to be friends and then they aren't. Because Chris cannot be friends when you're competing. She told me that when I was playing. She says, Billie, I can't be your friend. Can we wait until my career is over? I go,
1979, 4 years after her defection, she was able to win Wimbledon in front of her mother. Sometimes it seems she was one of the few Martina fans.
I was asked somewhere to list my heroes, and I included Martina, and one of the reasons was simply the joy and excitement she gave me in tennis, and a new kind of thrill, and also knowing that a lot of British people didn't want her to win.
Novak Djokovic.
Of course, when you're playing against a crowd favorite that has the majority of the support on the stadium, you have to accept that as a reality and a fact. You know, in those circumstances, those are the opportunities for you to grow your character strengths. I'm sure that those kind of experiences also made her tougher.
Chris Evert serves, then hits Martina's return high. Martina comes to the net and wins the point with a gentle backhand.
That's it.
She throws her arms in the air, then shakes Chris's hand.
You know, I think the beauty of our rivalry is that specific point that we were so different. You know, and even at a young age, I was American, she was from the communist country.
Clap, please, ladies and gentlemen.
Very emotional on the court, and I was cool and calm, and she was a serve volleyer, aggressive, and I was a baseliner. And so she brought her set of fans to the matches, and I brought my set of fans to the matches, and you know, that's why I think it was so interesting, because the contrast.
It's out, that's it.
We were very opposite, but deep down there's a sense of compassion when the other one lost. After we retired, we could just shake off any sort of competitiveness, jealousy, negative feeling that we had, and we could just totally appreciate each other as just human beings, not only as tennis players.
I think it's great that at 31 years old, you're still winning these types of awards. I think it's great. When, are you going to retire soon, or let us have a chance?
First, you have to retire. You're older than I am, don't you remember?
I am.
At least a year.
They always got along better than people think. Roller coaster, but look now, they're great friends.
Since you haven't won too many awards this year, only the two biggest tournaments in the world, Wimbledon and the US Open, I'd like to present this BBC Television Overseas Sports Personality Award to you. I think it's very merited.
From one person on to another, thanks.
We went back to Czechoslovakia when she was an American citizen, and I witnessed that whole scene, which was incredible.
The media were there in force for a homecoming that was being stoically ignored by the Czech authorities. Some journalists carried photographs to make sure they'd recognize the world's number one tennis player when she appeared from the customs hall. It was the first time that Navratilova had seen her family in 11 years. But what she might have hoped would be a touching moment became a scramble to force a way through the arrivals lounge at Prague Airport.
She was a non-person, meaning the American team led by Chris Evert, Pam Shriver, Zina Garrison, but there's no mention of Martina at all in any sort of newspaper, etc. We go out and the American team is introduced, and I looked in the corner of my eye over at the balcony where all the officials were, the government officials, and they just sat in their chair and didn't respond, didn't clap, didn't stand up. They just were, you know, poker face and just looking at the scene. The fans love her. Got more of a standing ovation than Jana Novotná and Hanna Mandlíková and, you know, Helena Suková, who were the Czechoslovakian team. It was a delightful surprise, let's put it that way, for everybody who went over there partaking in this match.
The public embrace of Martina returning back to her homeland, returning as one of the great champions of the sport of tennis, seeing the public embrace was incredible.
Welcomed back home and in America, where her parents defected to join her. Finally, acceptance of her and acceptance by her of her own feelings.
I really didn't figure it out until I had my first relationship with a woman. Then when it did happen, I'm like, oh, that's what it was, you know, because I'd had these crushes, but I didn't recognize them as anything but just crushes on adults. You know, I had crushes on men as well, but they were definitely stronger on women. My dad asked, you know, we think that you're living as a man and a woman with this woman that I was with. And I always said, if they ask me, I will tell them. So that's exactly what happened. You know, 5 years after I'd been with a woman, they asked, and I said yes, and then all hell kind of broke loose. But
You know, Dad said some things that he wished that he hadn't said, but he didn't know. Again, people really didn't know any better. We never stopped talking or anything, but there was a tension. Mm-hmm. And then my dad, he educated himself. He read some books. And he says, you know, I realize now it had nothing to do with you or me. It's just this is who you are, and it's okay. I just want you to be happy. And that's all you want from your parents. And this is 30 years ago.
You talk about your family coming over. Did you buy them a separate house because you wanted to protect them from finding out?
Well, no. I needed the space on my own. Even if I had been married with a man, I still would have wanted that separate house. You know, I'm an adult now, and, you know, the parents live next door. They literally live like three houses down. So at the end, it was all only about me being happy, and does the person I'm with treat me well?
But her private life would be played out in public. There were televised lawsuits. Breaking up was hard enough, but this was suffering in the glare of exposure. The emotional toll was obvious. The financial cost revealed for all to see. What was not so clear, the costs of being openly gay.
I knew it would cost me on many levels. What I didn't realize is how much it would cost me in fan support. That was a very negative thing from the fan standpoint. I mean,
from crowd reaction or
yes,
from letters?
Crowd reaction, yeah. Letters, crowd reaction, response to when I would come on the court. When I started winning, it really being gay and winning, I think was too threatening. Mm. You know, it was okay to be gay as long as I was losing, but when I started dominating, somehow I had an unfair advantage. I don't know how.
Financially, it would have cost you a lot.
I didn't lose any deals, but I didn't get any new deals. Let's put it that way. I had my shoes, rackets, and clothing contracts always. And then when I started winning, the money was better. But did I ever get paid as much as Chris for the same deals? I doubt it. And I certainly didn't get any outside deals for, you know, Wheaties.
All right, here we go. It's nice and quiet. Let's roll sound, roll camera, set, and action.
What is about challenging yourself more than anyone else?
And cut. That was
all right,
beautiful.
Cutting there.
All right. Breathing enough.
That was breathing enough. That was good.
The good thing for Martina, which I was very happy about, is she was able to keep playing.
Here we go. We are set.
By doing that, the LGBT community had a champion who was still playing, which was thrilled. You know, she's one of our, I call women sheroes.
Comes from her passion. As a player, she was passionate, and she still is. And that comes from within. I mean, two people I can think of are Billie Jean and Martina that have that passion. They're still as passionate now, more passionate because of a few humanitarian things, as well as tennis.
She voices her opinion, even if it's controversial, even if it goes against the norm or the grain, and probably made some mistakes, but I think better to be that way than never to say anything. Like me.
Martina Navratilova, former number one in the world. Come and have a chat with me by conquering the world. I'll do it again.
I think that was great. Right. That was perfect. That was it. Yeah, that was.
She's
great.
Very good company. She has a very dry sense of humour, and her eyes hold you. I sat next to her at Wimbledon, and I was her guest. She very kindly invited me to stand in for her wife, so I was her temporary wife. She's the kind of person, a bit like Bob Dylan, that you just don't want to get in their bad books. You don't want them to give you a look of, who are you? You know, she's got real presence.
I think she loved the sport, because even a couple of years ago, I saw her on the tournaments and practicing a lot. No?
I think that's been part of her compass in life, is the great sport of tennis. But she certainly is aging gracefully, and you know, now to see her in a marriage partnership with Julia, it's just another amazing stage of this incredible woman.
Julia.
I guess warm people attract warm people.
Well, she's Russian. Who knew that a Czech and a Russian would get along this well? It didn't go so well back in the 60s, but here we are, and for many reasons it's emotional. The impossibility of even thinking that you will get married, you know, growing up as a gay woman. Now Julia, we meet, and she has kids, and we just become a family, and everybody's happy that we're happy, so it's great.
Relaxing. Perhaps the secret behind one of the most successful partnerships in professional tennis.
I always said while we played, one of the reasons why our partnership lasted so long is we actually did not spend that much time together away from the courts. So when we were together, it was really pretty fresh and fun.
From July 1983 to June 1985, Martina and Pam won every Grand Slam doubles. In total, they were undefeated in 109 matches.
Everybody has a lucky break, I believe, in life, in their business life, in their personal life. She was my lucky break.
There were others, but mostly with Pam. Martina won more doubles titles than singles.
I remember telling her at 17, you can be the greatest player ever. I always thought she was the best singles, doubles, and mixed player ever to have lived up to this time. I think Serena might do better, but most of them don't want to play doubles and mixed like our generations.
Well, it's tough, no, because in terms of timings in the schedule, it's difficult to play mixed and doubles, because to adjust and to be 100% focused in one thing if you have to compete in three different tournaments. No? So it's amazing all the things that she did, and she is one of the most important stars in the world of tennis for a long time.
Maybe Martina forever will be the best singles, doubles, and mixed player that's ever lived. She's such an all-around great athlete.
This year's lifetime achievement, a winner is Martina Navratilova.
In 2003, she equaled Billie Jean King's Hall of Wimbledon titles, 20. Each one has its own story.
Well, I was playing with Martina at Wimbledon in 2003 in the summer, and as I jumped up for a smash, the lights went out. Well, it wasn't really the lights went out because you're playing in broad daylight, but it was I lost my vision. And I had the presence of mind to cover my head with my hands to protect myself, and I came down like a ton of bricks. And when Martina came to me and she tapped me on the head, she realized I was burning up with fever. Well, I did not want to tell her that I was playing with 104.3 fever. I did not want to tell her that I had this thumping headache for 48 hours and I wasn't feeling good at all, because I knew she wouldn't let me play. So I persevered through it, and we won Wimbledon. But the next morning I went back to Florida and I was diagnosed with a tumor in my head. And I was very lucky that it wasn't something permanent.
I think you'll be surprised to see the person walking out here with the trophy. You don't know he's here, but he wanted to be a part of your celebration. It is your mixed doubles partner, Leander Paes. Are you kidding?
Leander walks on with Martina's trophy.
I'm very emotional about Martina. Martina is just someone that's not just a champion of tennis, but she's a champion of life. When I was in hospital, my 9 p.m. phone call was always her. I just feel that I'm a blessed man to have Martina as one of my best friends.
I think you'll be back next year, won't you?
I'll definitely be here whether I'm playing or not, but I'll be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Well done to Leander Paes and Martina Navratilova.
She would play on. 3 years after this, she'd win her last major title, the mixed doubles at the US Open, a month short of her 50th birthday. Martina, more appreciated with each passing year, with each passing tear. At home in America, at home here on the green grass of Wimbledon, and in the homeland she so dramatically left as a teenager. Now a citizen of two countries, America and, since 2008, the Czech Republic, so she can easily relive her Prague childhood, every last bit of it.
At least you can trust your dentist.
I hope so.
Severely testing family love, the dentist here is her younger sister, Jana.
She's laughing. She's a sadist. She's really going to enjoy this. What was I thinking?
Martina's in the dentist's chair.
No, that's not funny.
She loves reading a book, eating, she loves to eat. She's always very happy when I cook for her. And I always ask her, what do you want? What should I make for you when you come?
And she said, oh, do you have something sweet? Could you do me a palacinke? It's a crepe she likes. And then she relaxes and is happy.
We're going to go for lunch now.
Just
test the teeth out. See you later.
The red rooftops of Martina's hometown, Jabnica.
Her hometown has changed over the years, but not much. There are still no traffic lights, yet it's home. And somewhere she can share a cake or two with the girl she first sat beside in school.
So
And Kitka's family lived in there.
Yeah, they never moved. I mean, that was their house. And I think if my parents hadn't moved to the States for a year, we would still be in that house. Yeah. Instead of, you know, where...
Was that sad for your parents to come back and not be go back into their house?
Yeah, it was difficult because it was not just a matter of emotions, but it was a matter of inconvenience because it was difficult to find a house and they wanted to live in this town. My dad called and said, you know, we found a place. So I sent them $50,000, they bought the house, and that was that. But they were just lucky that they were able to even get it. Yeah, so this building was that's the Sokol. Oh. So the gym is in this building here.
Ah, what's Sokol?
Sokol, he was the guy that started these clubs for exercise.
And fitness has always been a major part of your life. Raising two kids in America, you have to be, you know, there's so many...
Yes, Julia was always very strict with the kids, you know, very natural, healthy lifestyle.
Julia tells her daughters, both of you, spit it out here.
Could you hear her chewing?
Yes, I could hear her chewing. Well, somebody I know bought them chewing gum. I never buy them chewing gum.
I didn't buy them chewing gum. Vika, do I need to be the police and check everything you do? We don't allow you to.
No, it was
use.
In the candy.
You allow us to chew.
No.
In the States, it's a little more difficult here because there's just so much junk food out there. But we prepare their lunches and they get soft drink maybe four times a year, you know. So we restrict them, but they like it because they realize that it's better for them as well. Especially the older one, you know, she's 14 now, so she has to be careful with her skin. So it's a little bit easier, but they're good kids. They're easy.
And they're at the Chris Evert Academy. Well, how
right
you...
now they're both at Chris Evert's Academy. Go figure. How funny is that?
Do you have to get a pass to go in there? Or...
Chris gives me a really good deal. So life is funny.
How would you feel if one of them wanted to play tennis?
I'd love it. I mean, I certainly am not pushing them into it. But if they want it and they love it, it's great.
And when you think about what you had to go through as a kid now and how lucky, you know, they are in just being able to go to the academy.
It's different. Yeah, life is complicated and it's difficult in different ways. But yeah, I had a great life here. You know, okay, so I only had one pair of tennis shoes and I only had two pairs of pants. But you know, like I said, I was never hungry. I was never cold. So life is good.
A breast cancer scare in 2010 motivated Martina to campaign and encourage women to have regular checkups.
Mine was 4 years in between, and I didn't realize it at the time. I just kind of put it off. I moved, so I changed doctors, and I'm like, I'll do it, you know, next spring. And then next thing you know, you're in Australia, and you still haven't done it. And so it might have not turned into anything. It was DCIS, but it can become cancer. It can spread, and it's risky, obviously, and it was terrifying.
Well, when I heard she had cancer, it was a tough one for me because I lost a sister to cancer, I lost my first husband to cancer, and I lost my dad to cancer. So when it happened, we didn't speak about it all that much. I didn't offer to be that close support. And I did it basically because, you know, I haven't had the most positive experience. But she's sort of a close, you know, she's an example of a close friend that I can say, hey, I have somebody really close to me that is positive, has a positive result.
It's life, and it's. I don't think Martina thinks like this. She doesn't think it's petty for her or something. No, she's going on and doing things. So she doesn't think, oh, I'm sick. Well, I don't think so. I knew the diagnosis of the illness, so I had good hope, and I knew that she will recover. So I knew it, so to say. So I was happy when everything was over, yeah.
It's just in God's hands and the surgeon and fate or whatever. You just kind of hope. And, you know, it's been 5 years, so.
Yeah, and it's an important lesson that we've all learned from that. You decided you wanted to talk about it, confront it, and show how to deal with it.
Well, again, it's like being in the closet about something. So when I first knew I what I had and I had to have surgery, I didn't talk about it. I thought, I don't want to go public. But then when I really found out more about what happened to me, why I had it, what I had, how important it was to get those yearly checkups, I'm like, I can't keep this quiet. I kind of felt that I had a duty to speak out to encourage women to have that yearly checkup.
She's incredibly hardworking. When we were doing one of our early French Opens, we were fully prepared to fill in for her whatever she needed, of course. She said, don't be silly, I'm going to work. She would do her treatment in the morning before coming to the tournament, then broadcast the tournament, and then go out and practice because she was going to play in the Legends tournament at the end and won it. She has the world's biggest heart, and she has, ironically, very little, if any, ego. It's remarkable. She's not a tough gal by any stretch. She's got a very dry sense of humor, and she's also fearless and adventurous.
So, Julia, let me go up.
No, it's not happening.
Please marry me. Please marry me.
I don't care how many times you've won on that court. To propose to somebody, in effect, live in front of millions of people. It is a great reflection of who Martina is.
From Martina's proposal to Julia at the US Open in September 2014, to her at a press conference in Las Vegas with Sir Elton John.
When you see her in action on the court, and then you see her in action off the court, fighting her cause and sticking up for people and trying to change the world, it brings a smile to your face. I can't tell you how much that means to me and to millions of other people.
You know, you really can't compare eras, because if Steffi was growing up now, she would have a different back end, different strokes. I would have different strokes. I think the Steffi's slice would have given everybody, well, gave me fits, and I like low bouncing balls. I think the...
Who doesn't?
I thought you liked them high. Anyway, be that as it may.
I'm actually playing doubles with her, which is quite frightening, because I'm not a great net player and she insists that I get up to the net, so she's terrifying to play with. You're playing alongside probably the greatest female tennis player of all time, and you know, it's one thing singing in front of people, but it's another thing having to perform with that kind of greatness.
Team Elton John taking on Team Billie Jean King.
Martina high fives Steffi Graf and Tracy Austin.
The fact that she's still playing pretty damn good at nearly 60 years of age is quite remarkable. You know, I've had the luck to have watched her up close, to have seen her many victories at Wimbledon and throughout the world, and just to be astonished that the fact that she loves the game so much. I love people who keep going and have the passion, and I still feel the same. I'll be 69 next birthday, but I have as much enthusiasm now as I did when I was 20, and I think you could say the same of Martina. So when Martina talks to athletes and talks to ordinary people in the field, I think she has a good effect on them.
Las Vegas traffic in speeded up time, then bicycles with front baskets and a sculpture of a pile of books.
From Vegas to Cambridge, from bright lights to light blues, a champion of lawn tennis playing the oldest version of the game. Real tennis. She is about to become an honorary fellow of a Cambridge college. The college is called Lucy Cavendish. This is very different from the journey she began as a young tennis player in Czechoslovakia.
Game! To love!
This is like an absolute legend.
Hello.
Oh, my family are going to be so jealous. I told my sisters, they were just like, what? How is this even possible?
So it's a different bounce to what you're used to.
I think it's really good to have someone like that promoting women's sport. I think it's something that's growing massively at the moment, and to have someone like her come along, it's just obviously really encouraging. I think that will only spur people on to go achieve even more excellence.
A large red brick house.
You know, when I was 12, I did very well in school, and I was a straight-A student until ninth grade, and then when I went to high school, I started traveling, and then the grades were B's. And then when I really started traveling, I had C's even, which was unheard of for me, but I was on the road so much. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, goodness.
Welcome. Would you like to come over here?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone.
everybody. We're here today to mark the occasion of Martina Navratilova becoming an honorary fellow of our college.
As it turned out, because when I was in the final year of high school, the final exams were during Wimbledon. I didn't go, and then I left the country. Then I defected, so I never graduated from high school.
Martina has said that the key thing is for women to set no limits. She's a fantastic advocate for women in sport and a motivational speaker about women in leadership. Her tennis has delighted and inspired generations of tennis fans, and she can still be seen playing at Wimbledon to this day in the Legends doubles as she approaches her 60th birthday.
I, Martina Navratilova, elected an honorary fellow of Lucy Cavendish College, accept the purpose of this college, its statutes, ordinances. For me to be getting this fellowship, you know, only women that have like the brilliant academic careers have that. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. I'm very humbled.
Martina Navratilova, by the authority and in the name of Lucy Cavendish College, I welcome you as an honorary fellow of the college.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to have you here, Martina. Now,
and I also promise to always cheer for Cambridge over Oxford. I was planning on graduating and becoming either an architect or an engineer, building something, and play tennis as long as I possibly could.
I'm the fellow of mathematics. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Shona Wilson, biological scientist.
I had a plan A, which was school. Plan B was tennis, but then the plan B kind of took over.
I'm Jenny Gibson, University Lecturer in Psychology and Education.
Oh, okay. Are you profiling me right now?
Yep.
I usually sign just my first name, so I have to practice my last name.
She herself would make an intriguing subject. Rushing, always rushing, because there's so much to do.
You've got 2 minutes to get these photos.
No pressure then. And a little bit closer for the two of you, I think.
We've already been looking like we're getting married, haven't we?
I already have a ring.
That's lovely.
That was great.
You always find something to fight for that you feel strongly about. I've been fighting on many different fronts, whether it's for kids, for animals, for the environment, old people as well, people that basically can't help themselves, and of course gay and lesbian rights, women's rights. I mean, we still have a long way to go. But basically, the only people that have nothing to fight for are white men, straight white men. They're all set. But if you're outside of that, you're an outsider. And there's a mountain to climb. It just depends on how high that mountain is, but there's a mountain to climb. I do it in my time, in my pace, at my level. You know, hope that it makes a difference somewhere on some level. It's always a fight.
It's an appalling cliche and really disgraceful, but if anyone was going to have Sinatra's My Way sung at some Lifetime Achievement Award, it should be Martina. She really did do things her way.
Great. God, let's give him the
mic. Has Martina changed? I think she's really enjoying being a mom. I think she's just having more experiences outside the tennis court that have made her just fuller, more of a full person.
Okay, push her out.
Ah! No, I don't want to go for a swim in this.
She's the greatest tennis player that ever lived. You know, she's an inspiration. And if I was an inspiration to her, she's certainly been one to me.
I think she taught all of us how to be more comfortable in our own skin. Maybe she wasn't as comfortable, but you know what? She made us feel like she was.
She showed a human dimension that was simply marvellous. To be so brilliant without being robotic, to be so technically perfect, so athletic, and so wonderfully joyous when she won. And she gave sport everything, and it is a richer sport. And I think she enriches everything she touches.
Thank you, girls. I'll pass the test.
Yeah. When do you want to come for the next one?
I might do that.